Hi, welcome to the Let's K-12 Better podcast. This podcast is a project between Mama Capes and her kids.
Hi!
In our podcast, we will cover a variety of subjects involving K-12 education and family life.
We will talk about the ways that parents, kids, and educators can improve K-12 education and family life.
We encourage you to join our conversation on social media using the hashtag #LetsK12Better. Let's jump into Season 2, Episode 12 of the Let's K-12 Better podcast.
Who are we in community with? Where does social, emotional learning, and civics overlap? What does justice look like if we're allowed to contribute everything we are to our society?
These are questions that David Adams thinks about every day. David Adams is the chief executive officer at the Urban Assembly. He's also a civil affairs officer in the Army Reserves and a dad of two sons. As a board member at CASEL, the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, and an author on topics in SEL, equity, and emotional intelligence, he knows his stuff when it comes to social-emotional learning. Mom sat down with Mr. Adams to discuss how we reimagine the ways we build stronger communities and engage in civic work. We hope that you enjoy this conversation.
We are delighted to have David Adams, CEO at the Urban Assembly, join us today on the podcast. I think that David is super dope. I am so excited to have him here today to share his knowledge and wisdom about equity, student voice, civic education, and all of the other things of wisdom that he has for us today. So, David, welcome to the podcast.
Amber, I couldn't think of any place I'd rather be at this point in time. I'm so honored to be here with you and participate in the conversation that we're going to have today.
Yes. All right. Well, then let's just get started. All right. So let's get started by getting to know you, right? We want our listeners to know who you are. You are the CEO at the Urban Assembly, which is a consortium of over 20 schools, scaled up promising programs, and partnered with hundreds of public, private, and nonprofit sector partners to increase educational opportunities, right? And to close the opportunity gap for thousands of low-income youth in New York City. So this is amazing. If I'm unfamiliar, though, right, with the Urban Assembly, can you share a bit about the organization's mission and work?
Absolutely. Thanks for that question, Amber. So the organization's mission is focused on enhancing the social and economic mobility of young people by improving public education. We envision our graduates as being college, career, and community ready, and we do that by investing in the academic, social, and emotional, as well as career pathways, opportunities for our young people. We do work across the city. As you said, we have 23 district public schools in which we innovate within in order to scale without, right? So the innovations that we develop within our public schools are scaled to the larger New York City community, as well as communities across the country. So places like Los Angeles and Tennessee and Texas, they've all benefited from the work that we've done on behalf of kids who could benefit from social and economic mobility in the context of the improvement of the public education system.
So it sounds like this is how schools should be. And we'll get a little bit more into that later on. But I do want to talk about, you know, you're participating in this just really amazing and leading, not even participating. So let me first set that straight. You are leading this organization and doing this great work. But I'd like to know a little bit about your own journey to this point. What inspires you to pursue the work of educational equity rooted in social emotional learning?
I appreciate the question, Amber. So educational equity, to me, it's about how we think about this notion of community and justice, right? How we think about who we're in community with, and what does justice look like if we want to create that community that allows us to contribute everything that we are to our society. And so when I think about social and emotional learning, I think about the skills and the tools and the processes that we need to maintain and develop that community. I think about things like active listening and perspective taking skills. I think about things like resolving conflicts. I think about things like knowing who you are and what you need. And it's amazing to me because I think this is truly what humanity has struggled with. I was on a panel yesterday and somebody said that history is about the ways that humanity has tried to solve problems, right? And what we learn from history is what went well and what we need to continue to improve upon. And so this notion of equity, I think, is a underestimated effort. Right, it's not like 1 + 1 equals equity, mm-hmm. you know, or 2 - 3 equals equitable outcomes. Right, it's this ongoing conversation that allows us to pursue this notion of we the people, and challenge ourselves to come up with ever greater imagination with regards to who the we the people is and how do we include them in a way that's just and fair and keeps them in community. So. That's why I care about equity in the context of social and emotional learning. I think that when we are uplifting all of our kids, when we are uplifting all of our schools, then our entire society benefits. So if we can create that imagination to send a man to the moon, we can create an imagination to reshape the educational systems in our country. If we have an imagination to come up with a vaccine, for a virus we didn't know existed 2 years ago, we can have an imagination to invest in the kind of builders of people, right? And that's what I care about, and that's why I think that social-emotional learning gives us the tools to translate that imagination to real life.
So, you know, I'm going to ask one more follow-up. What do you think is at stake then, right, if we decide not to pursue, you know, educational equity rooted in social-emotional learning?
Our sense of community. You know, I think what the United States failed to do in our founding was to imagine a community beyond the limitations that had been put in place, right? And that was around things like royalty and landed gentries and titles. And so, you know, the folks who were in charge at the time had some imagination in terms of saying, you know, we can do better than the only way to own land is to have to be have a title, and have vast majorities and vast poverty, right? Where the vast majority of folks were contributing a lot of their labor to a very small percentage, and I want to honor the folks who at the very beginning said we could do better, right? We can do better than just white men with land. They were folks from the very beginning who said we can do better than that. But at the same time, the extent to most folks' imagination at the time was, let's figure out how we can be in a better community, in a more perfect union than one in which the landed gentry is just extracting wealth from peasants. And so that was pursued, and that an idea, that emotion, that notion inspired generations of African Americans and women and LGBTQ folks to continue to realize that dream, not just for landed white men, but for our entire country, right? For our Hispanic brothers and sisters in the Chicano community and Cesar Chavez. And not only in the United States, but to take that notion and export it across the world in which people thought, I can participate in my government. I can be the community that I would like to create. I don't have to have people tell me who I am just because of what blood they inherited from their ancestors in the context of titles. And then you had black folks who said, what about race? You know, ain't I a woman, right? I too sing America, if you think about Langston Hayes, but I'm his darker brother, sister. And so, or excuse me, darker brother. So this is what's at risk. What's at risk is our continual refinement of who we are as a community, as who we are as a nation. And it's time for us to take those who have the imagination and have the willpower to bring us in a larger, deeper, stronger community to stand forth and say, yes, we can do better. This is what we were, but it doesn't have to be who we have to be in the future. And we talk about the skills of perspective taking, of listening, of empathy, of community building, of relationships. Those are the skills that we will need to bring to bear to make that dream a realization. And I think, you know, hopefully that when I leave my kids a legacy, it would be a legacy in which they saw folks use these skills, and teach their kids how to use these skills to make the world, or at least our country, I should say, a place that is worthy of the sacrifices of those who came before us.
Yo, that's super, super awesome. And I love that you're using this whole being more imaginative about what is possible with the human experience. I think we think of imagination and we immediately go to technology or to go off of this planet or some other, you know, out of this world idea, when much of what we need to think about when we engage with each other is being a bit more flexible in our thought about how other people experience their own lives and their own stories, which
real talk. I think, you know, I mean, you know, we can critique our founding fathers for a lot of reasons, but nobody thought peasants should rule, have any relationship to be able to rule their country. That was crazy, right? These folks were meant to be ruled. You know, Master Commander Russell Crowe, he said, men are meant to be governed. And that was the notion. And then, you know, for what it's worth, the United States came up with this notion of self-governance, and people were like, well, good luck with that. We'll see you in 20 years when that falls apart and riots. So, you know, we gotta honor folks for their senses of who they are, and also recognize that we can do better. I'll give you a quick example, Amber. So you know Star Trek, right?
Yes. Time out. That's one of my favorite shows.
That's the thing.
Time out though. Next Generation, or are you like old school?
So wait, I'm Next Generation, Deep Space Nine in particular. You know, Voyager's I can get with it sometimes, especially the Borgs. But this specific example comes from the original trilogy.
Okay.
So what I find so interesting about this, and this is something my dad taught me, is so we're in this space, and you know, Star Trek, you got warp speed engines, you got alien species, you got O'Hara, you got Kirk kissing, right? They're like, we are a progressive show that has a vision of the world that is not bound by not just racial kind of conflict and constraints, but alien versus human, right? And there's a scene where somebody asks Kirk, you know, when are we going to have a woman captain, or can the Starfleet have women captains? And Kirk looks around and is like, man, that's crazy. Like women captains? Like, you know, we're exploring the stars here. We're seeking out new worlds and new civilizations. But women captains is just something that's not on the docket of what we're trying to accomplish, right? So even those with an imagination that could see the racial strife and imagine the future by which we were judged based on who we were, not just on what racial category we were in, failed to have an imagination to extend that to our women. And that's what I mean, right? When we think about that, right? We got to honor, again, the folks who are like, no, we can be captains, right? There were folks who were at the time who were like, no, I can see that. But it is hard for folks to see beyond the social constraints and social structures of what they know. And that's when we talk about what it means to be college, career, and community ready, that our schools should orient our young people for not just the building of physical bridges, but also building of the social bridges that allow us to continue in the community.
That's awesome. So then let's like talk about a space where you and I actually participated in a reimagining process. We both were members of the Lift Every Voice conference organizing team. Shout out to them. Shout out to us. It was
Shout
super
out.
Awesome. Yes, yes. So I have to ask you, like, you know, thinking about reimagining, like, what is the relationship between SEL and racial justice or anti-racism work?
So I think when we think about this notion of social awareness, and it says in the context of school, students demonstrate awareness of the role and value of others in a greater community. So students demonstrate awareness of the role and value of others in a greater community. That is a concept of social awareness, right? And when we talk about this with the kids, they're always like, I think this is great, Mr. Adams, we're rocking and rolling, you know, built some social contracts off of that notion. But unclear to me who is in my community. You know, is it my advisory? Is it my school? Is it my neighborhood? Like, who am I in community with, and how would I know? Right. And so what's so interesting to me is if you look at, you know, the history of the United States, there was such an intentional, explicit effort to make sure that Black people could never be in community. Whether that's the actual living communities in terms of housing and redlining and segregation, but also just like in the Dred Scott decision, actually the community of human beings, right? And by extension, by denying us opportunity to be in that community, we were not able to access the rights that the founding fathers had apportioned to communities, right? The rights of inalienable rights, the natural rights, because those were for folks in the human community. And so they called us subhuman, right? Worse than human. And so when I look at anti-racism, right, what racism stemmed from is that challenge of negotiating natural rights, that all men are created equal, with the need to subject and exploit the labor of Black folks. And so anti-racism to me is restoring the dignity of being in that community with other people, not because I feel particularly, you know, obliged to hang out in spaces outside of my own per se, but because of the dignity that was associated with that, right? If you look at Jim Crow, everything they did was designed to teach us that we could not be in community, from draining pools when Black people swam in it, to closing pools when Black people who were paying taxes asked to desegregate it, or pushed, not fought, I should say, not asked, because we fought, to putting lower water fountains, to calling Black men boys, to never using honorifics like Mr. and Mrs. Mm-hmm. Right? All these things were designed to deny us dignity and to tell us that we could never be part of this community. And so I think on the SEL side of the house, what we're able to do is bring people into a place with tools that allow our story to be shared. And Martin Luther King said, when he talked about the role racism played, right, is that it made people ignorant of their own thoughts and beliefs, that they couldn't even think straight in the context of evidence. It warped their ability to see the world, right? And so I would say that what SEL does is it gives us some tools to be in relationship with each other, to be in community with each other, not because there's a hierarchy that I just feel, you know, compelled to be included in, per se, mm-hmm. right? But because I want to make sure that we reclaim the dignity and the humanity that was written into the founding documents of this nation. And Martin Luther King called upon Thomas Jefferson's words when he asked us to live up to the nation's promise and not cash us the blank check that had been written. Right? And so it's these concepts of being in relationship, these concepts of being in community, these concepts of perspective taking. If you think about how John Rawls came up with his theory and his philosophy around liberalism, it was imagining that you could be born in any social class, of any gender, of any race. What kind of society would you construct? Right? That's perspective taking. You know, that is saying, imagine if you weren't born and then whatever privileges that you had, and it would be a totally random thing. How would you organize your society? And that's where he derived his principles of liberalism. So these are perspective taking skills. These are relationship skills. These are community building skills. And these are the skills that remove us from the founding stains of our country, to ones that live up to the promise of the founding documents that organized who we are as people.
Okay, first of all of that needs to be on a t-shirt, like as a whole speech. Number one, like real talk. Number two, I was just going to say that, you know, when I heard you talking about the little bitty things, and they're not even little bitty, right? Like not using Mr. or Mrs., calling Black men boys, right? I think people think of racism, right, as a huge, egregious act from one person to another person, right? Like, I'm calling you a negative word. I'm, you know, pouring stuff on you at a lunch counter. I'm putting, you know, dogs on you while you're walking down the street protesting for your rights. And not the things that each individual participates in almost unwillingly, right, to uphold systems of oppression. So I really appreciate you pulling in those, what people would just not even think about, like not calling someone Mr. or Mrs., or, you know, moving the water fountains lower, or calling someone boy. Like that's.
Or entering through the back door.
Right.
You know, I mean, like imagine what it means to just knock on a person's door, right? And like walk through their front door as an act of liberation, as an act of dignity. I mean, that is what, you know, we talk about dignity. That's what we're talking about here. That is what was stripped from us and continues to be stripped from us. Mm-hmm. In the legacy of these systems. You know, I may move and be able to enter through the front door of a white person's house, but there's a historical memory of the fact that that would be an egregious act 60 years ago, yep. You know, 70 years ago in my grandmother's timeline. So it is difficult to be, it is difficult to hate those you're in relationship with, to degrade and to strip dignity from those who you're in community with. And, you know, I had a friend of mine when I was in training to be an engineering officer in the Army. He told me, you know, he's from Boston. He said, Dave, I always know who the Vietnam veterans are in Boston. And I don't know if this is true, but he told me this. He's a white guy. He said, this is the only place you see Black people and white people hanging out. Because you know, and that's how you know they're veterans, right? You have to have some sort of experience that supersedes the narratives and the structures that we've put together. And that's when we have respect, right? And that's when we have a sense of dignity. That's when we have a sense that we are all in the same place. So yeah, I'll never forget that, Amber. I'll never forget the minute indignities, the stepping off of the sidewalks, you know, the balconies, nothing was too small,
right,
to visit on Black folks in order to keep them from recognizing our dignity and our power. And so in the context of SEL, I think we need to be in relationship with each other on equal terms. And that comes through storytelling, that comes through sharing experiences, that comes through the tools of perspective taking that allow us to see folks for who they are, not who we want them to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're going to segue a bit to talk about, you know, SEL and civics, because, and actually it's not really a segue because I feel like this whole conversation is just wrapped up in all of the things. So, you know, if you could dig in just a little bit more about this relationship between social emotional learning and civic education, like how would you connect those? Because many people do not see a connection. They see civics as very sterile. They see SEL or social emotional learning as very like warm and fuzzy, you know. So if you could connect the dots for folks, I think that would be super helpful.
Yeah, thank you, Amber. And I got to say, just a shout out to you, because you have always led with such clarity in this space, letting people recognize that civics is what we do every single day to invest in our communities and to manage competing priorities. So just, I want to definitely shout you out for that. So, I mean, I think, you know, the difference between being an activist and being, I call a statesman, but, you know, could also be a politician, is that an activist is pushing their point of view in order to reshape or influence society. A statesman is trying to compete multiple point or to navigate multiple points of view to try to pursue the common good, right? Again, you know, just go back to it. Black people were excluded from the notion of the common good, right? We just folks were just not concerned about our version of the common good because we weren't part of the community. And so when we talk about civics, it's about this very difficult dynamic process by which you have maybe five different people with five competing needs, five competing stakes. And they need to come to a consensus, a notion of how will we compromise, how will we collaborate, how will we integrate these things into a common good that we can all get along with. And then in our history, right, we've done this. We started with small bands, hunter-gatherers. We moved to clans that can organize based on familial ties. Then we moved to towns that can organize clans, and then city states that can organize towns, and then nations that can organize city states, right? And we keep abstracting this notion of community. But what we've not had been able to ever escape is the negotiation of competing priorities. So social and emotional skills are about being able to hear other folks. Being in dialogue with them, being able to take the perspective, be able to pursue community as a value concept in SEL, being able to be relationship and resolve conflict, being able to understand what your own needs and wants are and communicate in a way that allow folks to hear them. So to me, it's the very foundation of civic life. The idea that schools in America, which founded the notion of a public school because of what it meant to participate in democracy. There was a 100% relationship between the public school concept and the civic responsibility of citizens. The notion that schools would only care about who our kids, excuse me, what our kids know, as opposed to who our kids are, is crazy, right? People say this is a new idea. This is not a new idea. I mean, social and emotional development was at the founding of the core of the American public school system. There is no question if you look at the writings of Horace Mann, or even Martin Luther King, who was talking about intelligence plus character, that the responsibility of our public schools is to develop the whole child. Now we got to do that in community with our families, right? We can't just, you know, step out and be like, we got this, you know, we're going to teach him X and you can do whatever you want. We got to do that in community with our. And it's not designed to compete with our other civic institutions, our organizations of civil life, right? But certainly we can't be ignoring the social and emotional development and the biggest public investment in our young people that we have, right? Which is schools. So if we want to create a populace who understands and contributes to their legacy as a democratic society that has is the longest democratic constitution in the world, then we need to use our schools to equip our young people with the kinds of skills that they will need to prolong that democracy. It only takes one generation, you know? You can do something for a long time, and you know, it's like, you know, you got someone in the family, and you got the family business for 200 years, and everybody's excited, and you give it to your son, and he just screws it all up. You know, it takes out loans and no more family business. So every generation we need to invest in our young people's notion and skills and orientation towards navigating that common good. And so I don't think there is civics without social and emotional skills, and I don't think there are schools without social and emotional development.
I'm gonna say that obviously I agree with you. I would also say that I think people are a bit apprehensive because democracy is messy, right? You engage with other people, and that is just you're like, oh, I got to hear this person talk about their problems, and then I have to consider those problems, and then I have to like figure out how do they align with my problems or not align. Like I think many of us need to lean into the hard work required, right, of us to actually engage in civic processes in meaningful and impactful ways. And I think listening to what you've said about the relationship between social emotional learning and civic education, You know, it sounds like we need to start thinking of the individual as a civic institution. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, what do you think about that?
I think I love the way you said it, right? As a civic institution, we are our communities. You know, people are like, yo, Dave, you know, I don't really like this community. Like, we are that community, right? Like, right. What I do for my community is part and parcel of what it means to contribute to that. I got a neighbor, you know, I've been sitting at home, Amber, because of the COVID. I get out every now and then to come to my schools, but for Lauren said, I'm just looking out the window, seeing what life is about.
Yo, that's
I'm that old lady, you know, like you used to be.
I'm there,
you know,
with you, bro.
I know everything happens on my block. So I have this neighbor, man, and every day he comes and he walks up and down the street and picks up trash. You know, and he doesn't post it on Facebook, look at my civic responsibility, my social performance. He just does it because he wants to contribute to our community. So, you know, I think my big thing is pride matters. Without pride, there is no energy. And we can critique our founding documents, we can critique our founding fathers and the limits of their imagination, but take pride in the legacies that folks have left us, and not just our founding fathers, but our Black brothers and sisters who stood up and made those words ring true, right? Yeah. Who used their people power to say, you know, I too am American. So I'm a big fan of developing a sense of pride in who we are, because that's the only thing that keeps us moving. That's the only thing that invests us in improving. Cynicism didn't solve any problems, you know? Like you said, you got to sit around the table and listen to all these people approach you with all their issues. And cynicism is not going to move that situation forward. And that's why we talk about investing in these skills that develop the kinds of values that our young people will need in order to solve the problems of being a multiracial, multi-ethnic democracy in 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, that's real. That's real. So then let's talk a little bit about equity, access, and evolving the way that we educate and prepare young people for civic life and also just their future, right? So you're a pro, and I would like to ask what suggestions you have for reimagining access to amazing opportunities for kids.
I think in the civic space, right, we gotta remember that schools are society's investment in our future, right? If you think about what schools represent, there's only so many institutional organizations, particularly you talk about in some of our poor neighborhoods, right? You got police, you got justice system, criminal justice system. You have your social welfare system, that's kind of like catching up with you. But then you have your schools. Your schools are the institution that says, I want to create the potential, or at least, excuse me, unleash the potential that each individual has inside of them to contribute to that society. So then we got to organize our schools in ways that give students an opportunity to use these skills to resolve conflict. People tell me, you know, Dave, how can we talk about values in schools when folks have different values? I'm like, that's just the world. Folks have different values, you know? What are we going to do about that? Are we just going to sit around and like put it in our back pocket and not have a conversation? That's not the answer. We got to come up with a way to navigate those different values in order to keep us in community. Otherwise, that there's only the balkanization option where we all just go back into our different places and talk bad and talk smack about, you know, how does Amber do her Sunday dinner? Versus how Dave does his Sunday dinner, right? And I'm not saying we have to come to a complete consensus, but surely our students can practice consensus development. So I would definitely say this access piece has got to be in how we structure our schools, right? How we develop social contracts in terms of how we're going to relate to each other in our schools, like the power relationships between teachers and students, how they are developed and why. What it means to negotiate conflict, why, how are discipline systems reflecting the need to develop young people who can speak across difference, can negotiate conflict, can build community. So I think the access piece is in how we organize our schools. And, you know, I think the work that we've worked to do at Urban Assembly or tried to do has been to organize schools around these principles of social emotional academic development. That our students aren't just participants in schools, they're contributors to the space. That the only time that our students make decisions is not on, you know, do I want to start this assignment here and start this assignment next? But as our students said in a recent congressional briefing for SEL Day, that I am a person, not just a student. And if you see me as a person, you would recognize that I'm bringing my whole self to bear when I'm trying to be a student. And we invest in that person by investing in the kinds of things that are going to be the defining factors, Amber, of this next generation, right? The defining factors are gonna be, how do we navigate resentment across the rise of the immigrant population? How will we empower folks to contribute and create systems in which they can take their talents and skills and be rewarded and recognized through our economics, right? We're gonna have some major differences of opinion and differences of values, and our young people are gonna be the ones to have to navigate those in a way that maintains our sense of community.
So I want to say you probably have already answered the second part of this question with what you just said, but I do want to say it anyway. You know, you said in this Thrive Global article that our education system remains fixated on preparing students for a life of tests instead of the tests of life. You did touch upon this already about like them essentially inheriting all of this mess that we've all created for them. But is there anything else that you want to sprinkle on top to explain that quote, or anything else that you want to say about, you know, getting our kids ready?
Just that I pulled that from Dr. Maurice Elias from Rutgers University. He was my professor when I was in college, and he was the one who invested in me in this space in terms of social emotional learning. You know, I mean, just there are problems that don't have equal signs attached to them. And they are the problems that define societies, right? I got nothing against engineers. Engineers are not known to lead revolutions. I don't know of a revolution that engineers or scientists have been at the forefront of in terms of transforming society and replacing it. So we are going to continually refine our notion of this perfect union. In order to do that, we need young people who can do that. You know, I mean, good. I'm excited about shooting rockets to the moon. I'm excited about bridge building. But it's amazing to me that we were able to find the vaccine, these small little tiny problems in terms of like dealing with microscopic bits to find a vaccine very quickly. But the big problem of how do we convince folks to take care of their neighbors by wearing masks? Well, we really struggled on that. Like, what's up with that, you know? We solved the problem of how to get a vaccine, but we struggle with the problem of how to be in relationship and community and take care of our fellow citizens. So if we're gonna continue to struggle with that, and we always will, because that is an ongoing struggle in is what it means to be in society. There is never a society that just sat down and were like, we have formed the perfect union. We figured it out, you know? Right. 3 parts water, 7 parts oil, put some sugar in there, and folks will get along. That's not, I haven't seen that, maybe somebody else has, but if we're gonna recognize that that is not a state that we have seen, we're gonna need to invest in young people who know how to solve the problems and the tests of life, and not just a life of tests that we prepare them for in our current school systems.
Yeah, that's real. So we've been talking a lot about social emotional learning. And so I want to ask, you know, what do parents and even educators get wrong about social emotional learning when it comes to education and even life?
Well, I mean, I say a couple of things. One is that the goal of social emotional learning is to develop students who can empower themselves to solve problems, right? Intrapersonal problems, which is like, how do I relate to myself? Interpersonal problems, how do I be in relationship with others, given that they have different needs and interests than I do? And then employ those problems to make good decisions. So I'd say, I mean, one of the big challenges that I've seen with educators is that while social emotional skills help students to manage their emotions and their behaviors in ways that help them solve problems more effectively, that's like a byproduct of it, right? It's like the goal of SEL isn't to put a kid in the corner and say, go self-manage, right? The goal of SEL is to equip that young person to understand not only themselves but others and problem solve to the goal or to the outcome that they care about, right? Whether that's learning, whether that's forming relationships, whether that's maintaining relationships, whether that's regulating your mood. So I think one of the challenges is that that I think social emotional learning is only seen in the self-management context, and only in the self context as well. It's social emotional learning, right? Social and emotional. So the emotional piece is very important, the intrapersonal skills, but the social pieces are just as important. The other thing I would say is that I think the challenge that folks need to recognize is that social skills and how we understand social skills, while societally and socially constructed, are also designed to solve problems in terms of interpersonal relationships, right? Mm-hmm. So a hand salute, a bow in the context of East Asian cultures, a handshake, a dap, these are all solving for how do I exchange respect and acknowledge another person's presence, right? So being bogged down, I think, in this idea that the way to do it is societally or socially bound doesn't I think elevate the question of like, what is the problem this is trying to solve, right? Socially lubricated interactions matter. How do I use social skills like understanding how to apologize and assume positive intent to reduce the level of conflict by increasing the lubrication and positive interactions in my relationships? That's what we're trying to do here. And everybody's trying to solve for this. I mean, you can go to a hunter-gatherer society in Papua New Guinea, and they're also trying to solve for, right? How do I reduce conflict and increase the likelihood of a positive and effective interaction? It may look different. The structures and systems may be different. The actual demonstrations of that concept may not be the same way that a hand salute is different than a handshake, right? But the problem being solved is consistent. How do I exchange respect? So I think we are maybe investing too deeply into what things look like and critiquing what things look like as socially bound and not recognizing some of the universality of these kinds of social interactions that allow us to be in community and relationship with each other.
I appreciate that. I want to ask another follow-up just real quick. Mm-hmm. You know, you touched upon universality, right? Mm-hmm. Which I absolutely love. But I get in many SEL conversations, particularly with like white educators, and the goal, it sounds as if the goal is uniformity, right? So it's like, we're all the same. We're learning these SEL skills so that we can all meld as one, right? So I wonder what your thoughts are on the idea of using SEL to become uniformed versus, using SEL for some other purpose to engage in community?
That's a great question, Amber. Thanks. We're always, I think, as a society, trying to negotiate our individual and social identities, right? We're always trying to come up with a shared language of interactions that allow us to understand each other. While honoring and respecting individuals' cultures and backgrounds. And the analogy I use is Indonesia. Indonesia obviously is an island and it's an archipelago, I think I said that right. But they have all these smaller islands that make it up. And as you know, smaller islands tend to develop distinct cultures and identities. And so, Indonesia had all these different languages, but they wanted one national sense of how to communicate. It's very difficult to communicate if you've got 30 or 40 different languages to master, right? And so they just came up with a language, right? And pretty much kind of invented it out of wholesale. And that became the common way that folks could communicate their needs and wants and make their intentions known. So from my perspective, it's not necessarily about uniformity per se. It's a question of what is our common frame of reference in which I can understand who you are and what your needs and wants are. And language is a good way to do that, right? If you and I were speaking different languages, it would take us a long time to communicate to each other. And so I would nuance this notion of uniformality with this idea that without a common frame of reference, it's very difficult for us to understand the intent and the actions of other people. And there's something to be gained from using a universal language that allows us to interact in ways that reflect our intents.
Word. Appreciate that a ton. Thank you. So you're not just like a super awesome CEO of the Urban Assembly, killing it, being an evangelist for SEL, you are also an author of The Educator's Practical Guide to Emotional Intelligence and the co-author of a textbook, shout out to that, Challenges to Integrating Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Programs in Organizations. So can you talk a bit about these texts and how you hope that readers will use them?
Absolutely. So our first book is Educator's Practical Guide to Emotional Intelligence, and I wrote that with Dr. David Caruso and Lisa Rees. And that's a book that's just a very practical understanding of how to take principles of emotional intelligence, how to move, how to map, how to match, how to take these emotional inputs, information, and use them to meet your goals, right? So we have a great example across the book of how emotions impact teaching, and how to channel and harness those emotions to meet things and the goals that you're trying to accomplish in life. So I'm very proud of that book. I think that is gives really practical guidance to educators on how to channel their emotions to be and meet their goals. I think in the challenges to integrating diversity, equity, inclusion programs and organizations, our chapter in that book was focused on culturally relevant approaches to social and emotional learning. A lot of it is what we just talked about, right? How do we start with what students know, start with students' experiences, recognize who they are, and use that to abstract principles of social interactions, right? How do we move from a question like, what is the five steps to a handshake, to an enduring question like, how do we interact with each other in ways that show respect? What does this look like in different contexts? Now let's talk about what are some ways we can master that in the context of an American society, to negotiate and to communicate the things that you want to communicate. Again, you know, I've been in the military 18 years. I'm a civil affairs officer. We go through cultural relevance training and before you deploy. And that's the point. The point is to say, what is it that you want to communicate to the person you're working with? And what are the kinds of interactions that will do that? And vice versa. What is it that you don't want to communicate, and what is it that those interactions that will do that as well, so that the intent, what you're trying to communicate, send, and the receive, what the people are receiving from your attentions, are in alignment with each other through your behaviors and your words.
Yes. Okay, so we have covered so many things, and I appreciate you for that. I just want to know if there's anything else that you'd like to share, anything coming up with your students, any ways that people can support your students or support your work or whatever. What would you like to tell the people?
Well, first, Amber, I just want to say I'm a great fan of your work. I think your language around civic discourse, the role of civic development in our society, the importance of civic in schools, not as a class that teaches you the three, you know, forms of government, but as an action and a participation in self-governance. I think you do some of the best work out there at making civics live. So I just want to give you one more shout out for that, because you inspired me. I appreciate you too. The other thing I would say is we did a great job with SEL Day, hashtag SEL Day. If you haven't checked it out on the internet, please do. We had 12 million impressions on Twitter. We were trending for over 2 hours. So really proud of being able to put a concept of building bonds and reimagining community into the world. We have an upcoming SEL symposium. You can check it out at theurbanassembly.org. You can sign up to participate. We're going to have Heather McGee as your keynote. She's going to talk about Some of Us, her new book, that reflects on the role of racism in diminishing all of Americans by taking us away from not only our communities, but also taking us away from kind of the nuts and bolts economic outcomes that would have been improved if racism had been eradicated a lot earlier than it was. So we're looking forward to being in community with Heather McGee during that time. And I'm looking forward to just staying in touch with you, Amber, and your work and work with civic development in our schools.
Yes. Yes, yes, all the things, yes. David, it has been super dope having you here. The next time we bring you back on the show, the kiddos will be here to grill you with their questions themselves.
I love it.
Yes, but we really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so very much. I will make sure that all of the things that you mentioned are linked in the show notes. And I just want to remind people to follow David on Twitter. So I will have his handle linked in the show notes as well. Thank you so very much, David.
I appreciate you, Amber. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please follow David Adams on Twitter at @DavidAdams_SEL. That's DAdams_SEL.
David Adams said, "I can be the community that I want to create." And he challenges us to pursue that collaborative creation with this statement. It's time for us to take those who have the imagination and the willpower to bring us to a larger, deeper, stronger community to come forth and say, yes, we can do better. The notion of community and the practice of negotiating competing priorities is rooted in civic practices supported by social-emotional learning skills. We challenge families and educators to think more about how we build, sustain, and evolve our notion of community. Who is in and who is on the outside looking in? How do we exclude intentionally or unintentionally? How do we signal that the communal space is welcoming, and what signals do we give off that deny full access to others? How can we be deeper in community with each other?
If you have any cool epiphanies you would like to share, please leave them in the comments or share with us on social media.
Each episode, we will share quotes that we find inspirational.
Yayoi Kusama is a Japanese contemporary artist. She openly discusses how her art has become a way for her to express her mental health experiences and challenges. Kusama engages with a variety of mediums: painting, performance, film, fashion, poetry, and fiction. She is most famously known for her sculpture and installation, primarily using dots and repetition. Her quotes:
"I want to start a revolution, using art to build the sort of society I myself envisioned."
"Forget yourself. Become one with eternity. Become part of your environment."
"More and more, I think about the role of the arts. And as an artist, I think it's important that I share the love and peace."
"Our Earth is only one polka dot among a million stars in the cosmos. Polka dots are a way to infinity."
Thank you for listening to the Less K-12 Better podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe.
We want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media at Let's K-12 Better on all social media platforms, or connect with me on Twitter, Instagram, and Clubhouse at Mom of All Capes. We've got a newsletter with awesome resources and tools for families and educators. The link is in the show notes, so please sign up. The Let's K-12 Better podcast is available on every podcasting platform. So if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate and review our podcast. Your feedback helps us grow.
Thank you so much for listening.
See you next time.